KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. 5 months after firing their agents, members of the Writers Guild are still at war with the major agencies over packaging fees. In the heat of the ongoing union election, we try to explore a couple of perspectives on the two groups competing for guild leadership. We talked to WGA board member Angelina Burnett, asking, can the guild really win this fight?
In solidarity, we absolutely can. The agents will have to change their business model because they are nothing without us. As long as the membership is holding strong and giving us this power, I believe we're stronger than the agencies are, and it's just a matter of time before their circle moves over to our side.
We had trouble getting anyone on the air to discuss the dissident's point of view, but finally, guild member Rob Long, who's not running for anything but does support the opposition, stepped up. But unlike many dissidents who think some change is needed, Long thinks the guild's fight against packaging is pointless.
I think it's a misplaced priority. I mean, I not only think it's the wrong way to accomplish the goal, I'm such a weirdo. I think the goal is wrong.
You like packaging fees?
Packaging is, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. I really don't.
Two writers share very different perspectives on the epic conflict between the guild and the agencies. But first on the News Banter, a big new job title for the man who runs Warner Media. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in Banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, big new job title for John Stankey. John Stankey is the AT&T guy. He's actually originally from Southern California, but he has been like in Texas for a long time. He's a real kind of green eye shade wearing AT&T guy. He was running Warner Media, still is, which is a big deal. Like, that is a big pivot to a streaming service and the TNT and TBS and all the cable and HBO, Warner Brothers film and TV. I mean, a big job. But now his job is even bigger. He's going to be president and COO of AT&T, the owner of all those properties I just mentioned, starting at the beginning of October. That makes him look like the heir apparent to Randall Stephenson, which is going to be of interest to certain people. It certainly suggests AT&T values the entertainment assets that they bought and want it to be part of a bigger master plan of all these other entities that they operate. But from a Hollywood point of view, you sort of look at it and go, okay, with that job, how involved is John Stankey now going to be in running these former Time Warner entertainment assets?
Yeah, I think this is an acknowledgement that John Stankey is not a creative person and now is going to be upstairs, so to speak, running more of the general AT&T business and letting the people that he has chosen to run the creative part of the business. And namely, that's Bob Greenblatt, who's running the HBO Max and television initiatives. And it's Ann Sarnoff, who is running the Warner Brothers studio. Plus, you have Jeff Zucker, who is running the news and sports ventures that the company is doing. So you've got this trio of big executives running the creative aspects and John Stankey above them all, and has now got a big, big plate of other duties.
Yeah, I mean, I think people in the industry are just, they're just not so sure, Hollywood people. Like, what does this mean? I mean, we already are seeing a situation where they're trying to start the streaming service. It's obviously very important to them, HBO Max. But people in the industry are getting confused because it seems that HBO Max bids against Warner Brothers on certain projects. And it's sort of unclear, it's highly unclear who the referee is and who has the edge. I mean, I kind of am giving the edge in my mind to Bob Greenblatt right now because he seems to have so much of Stankey's confidence. And Ann Sarnoff is a completely unknown entity in Hollywood. So it feels like advantage Greenblatt right now. But overall, you sort of think, with this gigantic job, who's really in charge of how to get the children to play nicely together?
The interesting thing here to me is the overall strategy. And Stankey sent out an email to his staff this past week talking about the wider picture of synergy. And AT&T is a big believer that the media companies of the future are going to have powerful distribution fueled by A-list content. And nobody has that as much as AT&T. They have an amazing distribution platform, and now they've got all the content they would ever need. So the assets are there. It's just about being able to harness it and turn it into this powerful synergistic organization.
Yeah, we'll see. It's not so easy. And the executive situation is not easy. I mean, it's not as if there's like a giant group of people. It's kind of a moment in Hollywood history where grooming of young executives has really been neglected for a long time. And when you try to come up with who would be ideal if you didn't bring in Ann Sarnoff to run Warner Brothers, well, the answer is like a long pause, generally speaking. It was a real strain, especially since they were looking to balance their setup with some women, which they don't have very many of in important jobs. Speaking of women, we're looking at a study that was just came out, which shows, you know, maybe some hope for tomorrow and some progress. This is called Boxed In 2018 to 19. It's an update of a study from 2017 to 18 by the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film. And what it found is that there has been progress in the representation of women in front of and behind the camera. I will note that the primary beneficiaries of this are white women, but it has shown, for example, that the percentage of female characters grew from 40% to 45%. So that is progress. I don't want to get carried away, but as the director of that center said, for example, in directing where women have made progress, still women are outnumbered 3-1 by men as TV directors. But, you know, this means something, right?
Yeah, I think it means progress. And I think a lot of this has been in the works in the past couple of years due directly to some of the activism around the Me Too movement. I think people are taking these issues more seriously than they ever have, at least in my experience in Hollywood. And I'm curious what you think about that.
I think yes and no. I mean, yes, I think there's an effort to increase representation. But culturally, I think Hollywood is still the domain of the white man. And to prove that, I will turn to a story that The Hollywood Reporter ran this past week. I don't know if it proves it, but as anecdotal proof, we had this story about Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because we've done a lot of stories about pay parity over the last few years and whether, you know, people of color and women are getting the same pay structure as their white male colleagues. And a lot of those stories focus on initial hires. This is different. This is a sequel to a very successful movie that was a success for the representation movement as well as for the box office that it generated. The cast has gotten different job offers since this movie came out and was a hit. Now Warner Brothers is putting together the sequels. They want to do two. And yet when they went back to the writers to do the sequel, there were two co-writers, they offered the white male co-writer almost 8 to 9 times as much as the Asian female co-writer. And she said no. She quit. She said, I don't want to do this. And then she went public in an interview with Hollywood Reporter saying why.
Yeah, to be clear, she was a much less experienced writer than the white male writer going into this original movie, but she was credited as a co-writer. And to come in, as Warner Brothers did, with initial offers of $800,000 to $1 million for the white male, Peter Chiarelli, I hope I'm saying his name right, $800,000 to $1 million for him, $110,000 plus for her. That disparity is really striking. Now, to his credit, I guess, Chiarelli said, well, I will share with you and I will make it more fair. But Adele Lim said, no, thank you, because she thought, well, why should he have to be the one to make this right?
Yeah. And I think the larger issue going on here is the overall structure and how people are paid in Hollywood. And it's based on a quote system. What you've done in the past informs what you've done in the future. And that structure has a lot of weaknesses.
It bakes in discrimination. If women or black people or whatever have been underrepresented, the quotes will not be the same as people who have been allowed to flourish in this industry for years.
Right. And if you look at the value proposition for these two co-writers on a movie like Crazy Rich Asians, having someone with the Asian American background was hugely important to this movie. And part of why it was so successful and embraced by the Asian community was that it had authenticity to it. So how do you value that when you're looking at two co-writers on the sequel? She clearly brought value to that first movie, but it may not be reflected in the quote system that we currently have.
Yeah, she put it kind of devastatingly. She said that women and people of color often are seen as, what she said, soy sauce to sprinkle culturally specific details into a screenplay and not really credited with the whole whatever work went into crafting the screenplay. And, you know, the Guild does analyze who did what. And she did get that co-writing credit to stress. So this looks like a problem that Warner's is going to have to solve. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. In April, thousands of Writers Guild members were ordered to fire their agents, in large part because agencies refused to do away with packaging fees. Those are fees that agencies collect directly from studios when they represent one or more of the key elements on a show. The agencies have made buckets of money from packaging fees, and when those fees are collected, the writers don't have to fork over commissions to their agents. Still, many writers say the practice of collecting packaging fees has hurt their pay. It's been 5 months since the Writers Guild fight with the agencies began in earnest, and the two sides aren't even talking. A few smaller agencies have agreed to forego packaging fees, but the big ones, WME, CAA, UTA, and ICM, show no sign of yielding. Now the Guild is in the middle of an election, pitting current leadership against an opposition slate that says it's time to get back to the negotiating table. Guild members have until September 16th to cast their ballots. We thought now would be a good time to check in with both sides. However, we had trouble getting anyone from the dissident group to talk to us. We finally found one brave or foolish soul to do it, but he's a bit of an outlier in more ways than one, as you'll hear later in the show. On the other hand, we had no trouble getting WGA board member Angelina Burnett to give us her perspective as a supporter and member of current Guild leadership. She's running for re-election and also serves on the Guild's negotiating committee. Burnett has written for shows including The Americans and Halt and Catch Fire. Before that, she worked as an organizer for President Obama's 2008 campaign. For starters, we asked Burnett about the WGA staffing platform, an online system that was put in place to help showrunners hire writers who now don't have agents. The WGA doesn't have hard stats on the success of the platform, but Burnett says it does seem to be working.
The staffing platform, the staffing portal, had most success just by arming people with information. So usually the agents were the gatekeeper of that information, and they would tell you what showrunners were interested in, but you had no way of knowing, outside of what they chose to tell you, what the sort of the spectrum of opportunity was. And now what we have is showrunners posting their interests so Guild members can go on and look, and so they can look across all the shows that are available and say, oh, these things are good fits for me. And a lot of people, instead of submitting directly through the platform, used their networks to reach out to the showrunner from other angles and got jobs that way.
I mean, you mentioned this idea that some people network their way through.
Yes.
And of course, one of the concerns was if you're nobody with no
yes.
background, you can't do that.
Yes. I mean, I cannot pretend like this is a one-size-fits-all solution. There's sort of two cross currents in terms of how this action hurts our members more than others. Our screenwriters are hurting. It is much more difficult for screenwriters to...
In the feature world.
Yes, absolutely, because they don't have a built-in network. I mean, TV writers hire TV writers. Screenwriters are hired by execs.
And it's like, it's a
and
one-time...
It's
yeah. not like a 12 seasons of something.
Exactly. And so then you break it down further into people who are comfortable hustling and those who aren't. I don't like hustling. I hate it. I broke my way in by hustling. But once I did that, I was like, now I have an agent and they hustle for me. I don't want to hustle. So I can't pretend like the mixers and the grassroots support systems and the platform, which is really in its nascent stage, I can't pretend like this solves everyone's problems. It doesn't. And so all we can do is say, reach out to us. We are here. Board members are here to serve you. But, you know, this action is hard and changing entrenched power systems involves struggle and it involves sacrifice. And power does not concede anything without a fight.
So is the objective here that we're going to not have agents?
No. The objective is, one, to realign their interests with ours, but to even out the ecosystem. There's an incredible amount of power concentrated really in two companies, but four. And, you know, they have established very powerful brands that psychologically in the town, writers and executives and everyone believe that these brands confer value and that you are a better writer or a more valuable writer if you are branded by one of these agencies. But the reality is there is this sort of sucking action that happens that pulls all these young writers into these walled gardens of CAA and WME and UTA. They get sort of lifted up by the smaller, more boutique agencies and they get the beginning of their career started off and then they get poached and they get treated like chips. So you just put as many chips down as you can. And if one of them pops off and sells a show and you get a package fee off of that, great. If you don't, there's not a lot of value in you fighting to staff those low-level writers. So there are hundreds and hundreds of low and mid mid-level writers who have joined these big agencies because of the value it confers, because it makes them feel, well, if I'm at CAA, I'm worth more than if I'm at Rothman Brecker. And unfortunately, that's a fiction. That's just not true. And it's not fair to those writers. So, you know, a lot of times we hear from the opposition and from agents, well, if we return to a 10% model, these writers are going to get dropped. Well, they should get dropped. They're not being serviced by these agencies. They should go somewhere where someone wants to take care of them, where their 10% matters to the bottom line.
After the writers fired their agents last spring, the Guild kicked things up several notches by taking the major agencies to court, saying that packaging fees are a conflict of interest and a breach of fiduciary duty. The Guild recently moved that lawsuit from state to federal court. There was certainly in some quarters the view that maybe you were about to get an adverse ruling in the state court. No, yes?
I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I think it's entirely possible that there were pieces of our case that might have gotten tossed. Who knows? But the fundamentals of our case are incredibly strong. We had no reason to believe that the entire case was going to get tossed. And we moved to federal court because, one, you don't want to be litigating two cases in two different jurisdictions. Judges don't like that either. It's not efficient. It's not financially responsible. And because the agency sued us in federal court, that gave us the opening to not only countersue in federal court, but to move our entire state case, roll it into one case and move it to federal court, add RICO charges and add antitrust charges.
Which is very aggressive.
Incredibly serious. Yes. That is an incredible amount of leverage. So why anyone would quibble with the Guild making a move that gives us increased leverage when the entire game in negotiations is leverage and power? That's all that matters. It doesn't matter if you're reasonable. It doesn't matter if you're friends. It doesn't matter if you're smart. It doesn't matter what your data is. The only thing that matters in negotiations is leverage and power. And so we took the step that gave us the most leverage, which was absolutely the strategically wise choice to make.
As this conflict has dragged on, I've discussed it with several top agents who wanted to stay off the record. Early on, they started saying there were lots of dissidents within the Guild who disagreed with the way union leadership is fighting this war. At first, it was impossible to get any sense of who the dissidents were or how many were part of the group. But an opposition slate has emerged, led by writer Phyllis Nash. We asked her to come on the show, but we were told she was traveling. The gist of her position, however, is that it's time to restart talks with the agencies. I asked Burnett for the leadership's take on that.
I think we are most familiar with negotiations, where when you walk into the room, there is already an overlap. This is a 43-year-old agreement in which we are trying to totally remake a system of power.
Right.
So in that context, there is no overlap. There is no overlap in our Venn diagram.
Yes, that was the thing from the beginning. I kept saying, I can usually say, okay, you say 50, I say 150, we come out at 100.
That's
right. I don't see that here. What is it?
That's why there's no value in sitting down in a room and hashing it out, because there is no middle ground. So we're at a moment now where we are at an impasse with some of these companies. And that means that their circle is way, way far over to the left, and our circle is way, way far over to the right. And we both use our leverage and power to try to drag one side over to the other. So we are currently trying to drag their circle over to ours and create an overlap in the Venn diagram and vice versa. And when you're at an impasse like this, the more powerful side eventually wins. How long that takes, I can't say how long it's going to take to drag them to our side. I have an idea in my head, but I'm not going to say it here. So there's no point in getting in a room.
Is it millennia?
It's going to be 1,000 years.
Okay, I thought
no,
so.
No, it won't. So
what does it look like, though, when there's no overlap?
It looks like what we're experiencing right now. We have had many conversations about what various deals could look like, what we'd settle for, what our contingency plans are if the membership decides they're sick of this fight. We serve at the pleasure of the membership. We fight when the membership wants us to fight. When they say stop, we stop. This comes down in terms of the opposition versus us. What we have here are differing power analysis. The reason people want a revenue sharing model is because they think we can't end packaging fees. My power analysis is that in solidarity, we absolutely can, that the agents will have to change their business model because they are nothing without us. Now, if we cave, if the membership's like, I can't take this anymore, it's too painful, the power analysis changes. And then we have to have a different approach. But as long as the membership is holding strong and giving us this power, I believe we're stronger than the agencies are. And it's just a matter of time before their circle moves over to our side.
300 plus showrunners signed a letter of support for the Phyllis Nash dissident or opposition.
That's about 3.5% of the Guild.
Shonda Rhimes, Ryan Murphy,
Greg Berlanti,
John Wells, a few, Ava DuVernay.
They get one vote.
Alex Gibney.
They get one vote, just
big
like
names,
everyone
though,
else. I got to be really honest with you. I don't care.
Okay.
They are not more important than the rank and file. They're just not. And if you saw the response, if anybody saw the response on social media post that letter coming out, I don't think people realize we're in the middle of a generational shift in this guild. We are flooded with millennials who have been screwed by the economic system nationwide, not just in this business. They don't have anything to lose. They believe in collective power. They believe in linking arms and taking care of each other. And they were profoundly offended by these powerful people coming out and saying, we know better than you. They are welcome to use their voices. Shonda can use her voice all day long. She has an incredibly powerful platform. She has one vote, just like every other member.
Angelina Burnett is a Writers Guild board member running for re-election in 2019. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Coming up after a short break, we try and fail to hear from the opposition, but we do get a dissident perspective from writer Rob Long. We're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. With a Writers Guild election underway, we're talking about the WGA's ongoing conflict with the major agencies. Of course, the Guild is at war with those agencies over packaging fees. The Guild leadership that is waging that war is being challenged by a dissident group led by screenwriter Phyllis Nagy. We'd hope to talk to Nagy or someone running on the 10-person opposition slate, but the publicist representing that slate did not make any of the candidates available. So we started reaching out to some of the 300 writers who recently signed a letter of support for the dissident position. We didn't call all 300, but unfortunately, once again, there was a pattern of unavailability. We did find one writer who signed the letter of support for the dissident slate who was willing to talk to us, KCRW's own Rob Long. Long was a writer on Cheers and hosts the weekly KCRW commentary, Martini Shot. But we did not force him to do this. Just to be clear, Long's not running for anything himself, and his point of view, it turns out, is more extreme than the one expressed by other dissidents. So, Rob, as you suspect, as you just told me, you are the only one.
I am? Really? I can't believe it.
Look, it is possible that some of the 10 people who said they wouldn't do the show, you know, maybe some of them genuinely could not, but it seemed like kind of a trend of people saying, I'm so sorry, I cannot come and talk about the other side of this argument.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. I think one of them is there are people who are genuinely afraid that they'll be punished or there'll be repercussions or something. And I think there are people, I mean, there are a lot of people who are in a really tough spot because they like the union, they support the union, and they just disagree with this. And this is a very big thing the union's asked the members to do, to fire their agent. It's a priority that I don't know that a lot of writers had going into 2019.
So you did not, this business of firing the agents is not something you agreed with?
No, I think it's a misplaced priority. I mean, I not only think it's the wrong way to accomplish the goal, I'm such a weirdo, I think the goal is wrong.
You like packaging fees?
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. I really don't.
It wasn't just that you didn't want to pay the 10%.
Well, that was that's always okay, a nice little
sorry.
Yeah, nice little cherry on the top. I mean, I put it this way: I feel very differently if I was paying the 10%. But of course, the point of it is that they don't commission you. Instead, they just take a piece of the larger pie and they kind of help keep it on the air. Now, it turns out I wasn't very successful. You know, I haven't had a big successful TV show, so I come at this relationship from a position of I like the fact that somebody's willing to be a partner and roll the dice with me, even though I haven't really paid out. I mean, if anything, I have benefited more from packaging than any packaging agent has benefited from me.
You know, you are in a category of I like packaging fees, which I think is probably relatively small percentage overall.
As usual, I'm all alone. Yeah.
But is it your sense as well that most people kind of want to fight the way packaging fees work right now, but don't want it to be what they perceive as so scorched earth and so total lack of communication right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think they thought that what was going to happen was we were going to make a big noise and rattle the swords a lot and then settle on, you know, kind of a VIG, right? Basically what they call rev share, but really it's a VIG. If the agents are going to make a buck off of my labor, right? So I put together a TV show and it generates a license fee and they take a piece of the license fee, then I should be able to turn around and say, well, wait a minute, I want a taste of that. And I think the Guild, if the Guild had a larger vision in mind, would be saying, look, the future is going to be extremely rough for writers no matter what we do. It's going to be hard because we're going to have a lot of buyers and a lot of short orders of 9-10 episodes, and the fees are going to get pushed down because the back end is now totally uncertain. So if that's the case, how do we help writers in the Writers Guild have a career that lasts, you know, long enough to put some money in the bank and retire? Like, how do we do that? And I just don't think that packaging fees or eliminating them is anywhere near addresses that big question. So, I mean, this is what I've said over and over again, that the people who are agitating so strongly for this, for eliminating packaging fees, that's not really what they need. What they really want is a time machine. And they want to go back before everything happened in the entertainment business and change it. And you can't. You can't go back. It is what it is.
One of the problems I'm having is, so what would you do? I mean, do you have a sense of what this slate would do?
Well, that's the problem, is that once it's all or nothing and you've drawn the lines, it's really hard to compromise. So it's really hard. People, I think, will probably not vote for the opposition slate because they don't want to cave. And what I suspect is going to happen here is that the leadership, current leadership, is going to be returned to office, and this sort of weird stalemate is going to continue forever. And
forever?
Eventually, forever. Yeah. Well, look, if you're WME or you're CAA, you're thinking to yourself, why do I even represent writers?
Well, that's what they do like to say, actually.
But it's actually a good point.
Because, why? I mean, I'll tell you why. Because writers generate material, and everybody in the business chases material. And if you don't have material, you are going to get hurt.
Yeah, but that's wrong.
It's
that's what
wrong?
The writers want. Yeah, that's what the writers want.
I think it's true. It's not true.
It's not true. No. I mean, your intellectual property or who's the writer who generates the Marvel movies? That's Marvel intellectual property. They could replace writers.
Well, that's like an outlier of outliers. Marvel is like this thing that, you know, everything originates somewhere. I feel like there is something to be said, no matter what it is, it begins with the word.
But the truth is that in 2019, in entertainment business, you have a little intellectual property, you have a little basic material. Sometimes if you're pitching a TV show, it really helps if you've got a magazine article first or something else, somebody not in the Guild. That really helps. I know that we all want it to be a certain way.
I want to make it clear. I don't have a horse in that race. It just seems like logic to me. Maybe I've been brainwashed.
I think it's old logic, and it's not the case anymore. Packaging fees, eliminating them or doubling them, isn't going to alter the glide path or the collision path of the entertainment business.
So to be clear, you feel like your professional life will be worse as a result of this?
It'll be more complicated and worse, sure. Absolutely. And I don't think anyone's going to benefit from it. I really don't.
I don't know. Is there a way to say I'm not in the Guild anymore, and so I'm going back to my agent, but I'm still a writer?
Yeah, you could be. It's called financial core, and I think it's going to happen. Look, I think the leadership of the Writers Guild is pushing this to the brink. And when they push it to the brink, we will find out whether there really makes sense to have a guild with all writers in all different parts of their career being members of the same guild. I mean, it's a nice idea, and I think a lot of people want to keep it that way. But if you push everybody to the limit, as they are doing, you're going to find a lot of people saying, well, why am I a member of this organization? Why don't I just go financial core? It's all the same to me.
But you're not doing it now.
Not now.
Tomorrow? Next week?
You know, look, if I continue to believe that the leadership of the Guild is not prioritizing the challenges of the writers in 2019 in a way that makes sense to me and is rational, then I got to look at all those options.
Rob Long is a TV writer and producer and host of the KCRW weekly commentary, Martini Shot. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kim.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Paul Smith. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.